Rob McLaughlin on City Talk 105.9.
It is the new Sunday morning newspaper on the radio. If you've just joined us, welcome along to the programme. You've missed the big headline here this morning. The chairman of the Parliamentary Labour Party, Tony Lloyd, speaking exclusively on the programme a few moments ago, said that there is no conspiracy within the party to replace Gordon Brown with Jack Straw. And amongst his most controversial comments, he also admitted that the Cabinet does need some heavy, hard hitters, and also went on to say that George Howarth, who's been linked to a campaign to make Jack Straw a potential candidate against Gordon Brown, is not, quote, a heavyweight within the party. Those were some of his most critical comments in the interview that we had with him just a few moments ago. I'm joined live in the studio by Peter Elson, journalist and Liverpool Daily Post. Welcome again to the programme. And also Professor Bill Chambers from Liverpool Hope University. He is the Pro Vice Chancellor there at Liverpool Hope. And quite controversial, I think he's been all morning, hasn't he?
Oh, yes.
I think so.
Yes. On our toes.
I mentioned just a moment ago that Esther McVeigh will be sitting in for me for the next few weeks, starting from next week. Everybody's been asking me, where am I going on holiday? And I've decided I'm going to tour places of Britain I've never been to. And the first place I'm going to is a place called Midsummer. I've seen it on television. Apparently it's very nice. It's easy to get into, very hard to get out of. So
alive.
I'm thank you. I may be back. I may be back at the end of August. I may not be. Now, talking of Esther's, if not now, when? Is a very good question, which can be asked in many different ways. But it is the title of the new book from one of the country's best-known broadcasters, producers, and legendary campaigners. The full title is If Not Now, When? Living the Baby Boomer Adventure. Yes, after campaigning for the young, her target is now the over 50s. This will interest you, Bill. Mm. Her TV series, of course, That's Life, was pivotal to BBC One's schedules for 21 years, and it created a heady mix of serious investigative and consumer journalism alongside the trivial, the sardonic, and the downright silly observations of life in Britain. It could attract, believe it or not, up to 18 million viewers on a Saturday or Sunday night. Well, she returns to our screens, to BBC TV in the autumn, retracing her family history in Who Do You Think You Are on BBC Two. Of course, she went on to found Childline and remains president, and recently gave her support to the family of Jamie Bulger to help raise £1 million to create a new centre for bullied children here in Liverpool. We'll talk about that in just a few moments. Last week, to add to her numerous broadcasting and national honours, she is an OBE, my next guest was at the Anglican Cathedral in Liverpool to receive an honorary fellowship from John Moores University. At the ceremony, she talked about the McCanns, about Childline, and I suppose the kind of thing Childline was never meant to be. She called for common sense to return to this country over the way we protect our children. One headline, perhaps misleading recently, suggested that she thought Childline may have become a monster. Well, is that true? Well, I'm delighted to say joining me live from her home is, of course, the one and only Esther Ranson. Good morning, Esther.
Good morning, and of course, I don't think Childline is a monster. I never said Childline is a monster, and I don't believe it's a monster. I think it's an absolutely crucial lifeline for children who have nowhere else to turn. But the monster is a kind of political correctness which has grown up in the last 10 years, I think, in which the alertness that we all need to be sure that children are properly protected has turned into a kind of national paranoia. And I had great pleasure when I was on Jersey yesterday, visiting, well, day before yesterday, visiting a very, very charming day nursery, and someone of six, a small boy, gave me a bunch of roses, and I took great pleasure in giving him a kiss to thank him. Because it appears that we're not supposed to cuddle children, hug children, or kiss them, according to some loonies.
And do you, well, you called them loonies, Esther, do you think... Do you think, though, that Childline contributed to that fear?
No, I don't think Childline had anything to do with it. What I said in my piece was that there was a programme on which we launched Childline, which was called Child Watch. And we did a series of programmes in which we talked about the fact that children are sometimes abused by the people who should be caring for them in schools, in youth organisations, in the churches and so on. And that we need to be alert and allow children to disclose if something nasty is happening to them. But Childline had absolutely nothing to do. In fact, Childline believes in hugging, kissing, cuddling, all those things that children need to grow up properly.
So what do we need then to, because you called for this when you received your fellowship at the Anglican Cathedral. You turned to the Vice-Chancellor of John Moores University and said it would be great if you could start teaching common sense. What did you have in mind?
Well, I think we need to listen to our own instincts and respond to children when they need us, which is a lot of the time. But particularly if you see a child, you know, lost on a pavement crying for his or her mummy, obviously you stop and talk to that child. And personally, I would never take the child away from that place, because that's presumably where the parent last saw the child. I mean, I think you have to use your common sense. But I think what happens, I don't know who makes these daft rules. I was talking to a friend who had to rush back to school with some tweezers because the teachers refused to take a splinter out. And whether it's the individuals who've gone balmy, or whether they're being instructed by local education authorities or their trade unions, I don't know.
Well, let me bring in our studio guest, Bill. You'd like to raise a point.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by what you're saying, Esther, and I completely agree with you. I'm thinking of three areas I work in. For example, I help run a hockey club. And one of the ludicrous things about that is if I take some junior kids to a game, I can't drop them off at their own homes, because that might mean that the last one is left in a minibus with me. I have to drop them all off in the middle of the club, and then their parents have to all come and pick them up, which I think is nonsensical.
So
I think this sort of approach is going to reduce and cut people's volunteering.
Esther was asking, who tells you that? Who tells you those are the rules?
These are the rules. This is the training. If we're involved at all with youngsters under 16, we have to go on training courses.
And who does the very training clear. Courses?
Sorry? The sports authorities on Merseyside, but they're only speaking for the national sports authorities. And we have similar sorts of rules in the rugby section and the other sections.
You see, I am slightly concerned about this because I'm a trustee of the NSPCC.
Yeah.
And the NSPCC do a lot of training, including sports organisations.
Yep.
What you can do for me is just trace this back for me and let me know if any of it springs from the NSPCC, because I would be absolutely horrified if this lunacy, which of course puts young people at greater risk if you're not allowed to drop them home. Mm. You know, the parents get worried. Mm. Everybody gets worried. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, let me do that, Esther. With your permission, I'll give Bill your email address and let him pass it on. Esther, I'm going to pause. I'm going to press the pause button just for a moment. Stay with us. We're going to take the latest news in sport, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about your new book and why you're targeting the over-50s, and we're also going to be talking about your life now. We're talking live to Esther Ransom, but first, let's catch up with Laura and the latest news and sport. Laura.
Brown's on his summer holiday this morning amid an ongoing row over his future as Prime Minister. Justice Minister Jack Straw insists it would be a big mistake to force Brown out of number 10. It comes amid reports Merseyside MP George Howarth is gathering support for a move against him in the autumn. The sons of back-from-the-dead canoeist John Darwin have told a newspaper they were dragged through hell. They could also reveal how their mother Anne begged for forgiveness in a letter written from her prison cell. Investigations are underway into a crash in the Highlands which killed three adults and a two-year-old boy. A pickup truck swerved across the A9 north of Aviemore yesterday, colliding head-on with a car which burst into flames. And two British women are said to be charged with GBH after forcing a plane to make an emergency landing at Frankfurt Airport. The pair, who are rumoured to be from Merseyside, were drunk. One of them tried to open the cabin door in mid-air. The holiday jet was travelling from Greece to Manchester. City Sport. St Helens will find out this afternoon who they'll face in the Challenge Cup final next month. Wakefield take on Hull to set up the Wembley date. Saints beating Leeds by 26 points to 16 at the Galfarm Stadium yesterday, with Sean Long kicking 10 points. And coach Daniel Anderson was delighted after a tough match.
Oh, thrilled. It's difficult. Those games are so difficult. We lack rhythm. I thought we had so many opportunities to put the game to bed, and, you know, I think we just showed our professionalism when we needed to.
Aston Villa have completed the signing of goalkeeper Brad Friedel from Blackburn. The 37-year-old American has agreed a three-year contract with the club. That's after Blackburn signed Spurs keeper Paul Robinson yesterday. Meanwhile, Liverpool target Gareth Barry came on as a substitute as Villa made it through to the qualifying round of the UEFA Cup last night. They beat Danish side Odense 1-0 in the Intertoto to go through 3-2 on aggregate. Andy Murray's Toronto Masters campaign has been ended by Rafa Nadal. The Wimbledon champion beat him 7-6, 6-3 in the semi-final. The British number one had beaten Novak Djokovic to set up the clash. Well, Murray feels there were places where he let himself down.
I can come to the net, and that was the one thing I didn't feel like I did well enough tonight. I could have volleyed better. You know, there's a few points where right in the last game I missed one bad volley up at the net and missed a couple, I think, in the game where I got broken.
Nadal will now play Nicholas Kiefer in the final. And Middlesex have been crowned the 2020 Cup winners for 2008. They beat Kent in a dramatic final at the Rose Bowl. Middlesex made 187. Kent, needing three from the final ball, fell just short of their targets. City
Sport. Thank you very much, Laura. It's Rob McLaughlin, Sunday Morning Radio. I'm joined in the studio by Peter Elson of Liverpool Daily Post and also Bill Chambers from the Liverpool Hope University. We're talking live on the line to the broadcaster, the campaigner, the producer and the multi-award winner, Esther Ranson. Esther, welcome back to the programme. At the ceremony at the Anglican Cathedral when you picked up the fellowship last week, you also went on to talk about the McCanns, and in particular, something, the observations you made about the way the British press have covered it. What's your feeling on this?
Well, I think the McCanns have done exactly the right thing, because I think you need, when you're in a situation in which you've got somebody who perhaps is being held hostage, or as little Maddie has disappeared, I think it's very important that you keep that story in the public eye, because what you need is A, the authorities to remain on the alert, and B, the general public to remain vigilant. So I think they've done the right thing. But the extraordinary roller coaster in which the Portuguese police appeared to be in open warfare with the British press and vice versa didn't help anybody, because it meant that the Portuguese police have been incredibly hostile and defensive. And the British press have done things like, I think it was a young woman journalist who first put the suspicion in everyone's mind that this Robert Murat was mm-hmm. one of the suspects. Now, I think that goes beyond what the press are really there to do. I mean, I think we've got to distinguish between what the police do and what the press do.
From your knowledge of that area, and it's obviously a very difficult story and it is abroad, do you think that overall we should change our response mechanism to missing children in Europe, Europe-wide?
Well, I think the McCanns have done fantastic work in trying to make sure that police in every jurisdiction are working together when a child is abducted, because I think frontiers and borders can get in the way of people being able to rescue and protect children. So I think that's a fantastic campaign they've run with the European Parliament. It seems to me that what happened in Portugal was very extraordinary, that none of the local police seem to have been aware of what you do with a scene of crime and how you protect evidence and so on. So, again, I'm afraid, only judging from what I read in the newspapers, it does seem to have been rather a mess at the beginning. And, of course, those first few hours, as the Americans have shown, are the crucial ones. They're the ones when you need to get maximum publicity, because that's when people are trying to take a child away from home and maybe taking it the child many miles away.
Because the Americans do have a fast response, and in fact they do it in parts of the UK now as well, don't they? In the south, where they can get it on regional television and local radio very fast.
Yes, very good. I think that's terribly important. So I wouldn't criticise the McCanns for trying to draw the public's attention, particularly to that very interesting phenomenon in her eye, where she, no matter how she's disguised, that will show.
Now, I want to talk about your book in just a moment, but let me take you back to Liverpool for a moment, because, of course, Esther, you came on Pete Price's show, I know, and you were talking about the campaign to raise £1 million in memory of Jamie Bulger. How is that going?
Well, we're still at the early stages. We have yet to appoint a local fundraiser. So if anyone's listening, it occurred to me that some of the new graduates from the business school who got their degrees when I got my honorary fellowship might be interested in signing up to become a local fundraiser for us so that we can get things really moving, because we've got an enormous amount of goodwill both from the public and from individuals. And what I think we need to do is just find a way of harnessing all that energy and all that commitment, because it would be lovely to get our target before James' next birthday, which would be in spring of next year. He'd be 19, so it would be lovely to get the money in what would have been, should have been, his 18th year.
So the campaign is still very much alive, but it's early stages and a heck of a lot to do.
Exactly right.
All right. Well, Esther, let me turn to your book. Peter Elson is, you won't have seen this yet, but Peter Elson is sitting with a double-page spread from a Scottish newspaper in front of him, which is an interview that you did for the Sunday Post. And Peter, would you like to read out the bit I read out earlier about what Esther did when she hit her 50s?
Yes, Esther will be pleased to know that the opening paragraph reads that when Esther Ranson reached middle age, she starts to do some outrageous things she'd always wanted to do, like run around the garden naked, wearing only a chiffon wedding hat and a necklace on the morning of her 50th birthday. Now, I think we've got to nail these various gossipy rumours and ask Esther if that's actually true.
Well, go on, Esther.
Every word of it.
And apparently your late husband, Desmond Wilcox, wasn't too happy with you doing this, is that correct?
He was appalled. Then, when he saw how the neighbours' children were giggling, he went and got a camera.
So go on, first of all, why have you written the book and why are you targeting the over 50s?
Well, I'm well over 50 myself. I'm 68.
Never.
Never.
Never. Never.
Impossible. And somebody was talking to me about a book, and I became aware that this phrase of mine, if not now, when, had actually become a sort of mantra to explain why I run around the garden wearing nothing but a hat and a necklace. Because I think my generation are the generation that threw the rule book out in the 60s. And we're going to go on throwing the rule book out. We're going to go on breaking stereotypes.
So you're the Rolling Stone age.
We are. The Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Beatles, you know. I won't say anything about Paul's hair colour, but mine has varied over the years. So I think we don't want a sell-by date stamped on us by anybody else. I think while we feel, I mentally stuck at about 28. Other people stick younger. I know people who say they're 14 or 15, but I wouldn't like to be that, because I think that was an age of insecurity. And what I say in my book, as all authors are taught to say on radio programs, is that now you see I've forgotten what I say in my book.
It's a senior moment.
But, how dare you?
She can't have a senior moment. She's only 28.
Yeah, junior moment. A junior moment.
But as I was saying before, I was accused of having a senior moment. Of being over 28 is that you gain confidence.
But I was interested in that you had huge success when you were a young woman. I mean, you had a show that was up there with Morecambe and Wise and so on in terms of ratings. Mm. Do you resent getting older, that image stays with a lot of the public while, of course, we all move on?
No. Why would I?
I don't know. Well, some people do and some people don't. But I mean,
you're not against Botox, are you, Esther?
No. Now, explain to me all these unrelated questions. Do I resent being older than I was when?
Well, I should think that you had huge success as a young woman, and
yeah.
Youngish.
How old do you think I was when life hit its 22 million or something?
Well, if you're 68 now, I don't know, in your 30s.
Late 30s, mid-40s, you know. I wasn't all that young. I was old enough to know that things come and go.
Well, you looked young, so...
But Esther, you...
As against what?
I'm going to dig you out of this hole, Elson.
Yes.
I'm going to take the spade off you and I'm going to pick up the interview.
How old is that person?
I'm 50.
Excuse me, you should have reached the age of discretion. No,
Esther's only admitting to 50. Yeah.
Now, in all the reviews I've read so far, it says that one thing that stands out in this book is it's very opinionated. And you do, well, which doesn't surprise me, I suppose, but you do say some things about some people. And apparently, because you did work with her very closely, didn't you? You worked with Heather Mills lately, Heather Mills McCartney.
Yeah.
What conclusions have you drawn after you've seen the latest changes or the latest headlines regarding Heather and Paul?
I may not be up to date because I haven't followed her career with a microscope. What's the latest that you've
heard? Well, no, just I was just interested in your thoughts about, you know, you were saying, I read one quote from you saying that in many ways she's isolated some of the people who have been close to her over the years.
Yeah, I have one friend who is very friendly with her, and that friendship seems to have stayed solid. But I've never worked with anyone who made so few friends on the team. I mean, she actually wasn't the most popular girl in the class when she worked with us. She was just extraordinary contradictions. I mean, I think she worked very hard on behalf of other people who were amputees, whether it was through a terrible disease like meningitis or some awful accident. But at the same time, she had this fantasy world that she lived in, where at one stage she pretended she was somebody called Heather Mills, who happened to be the lady who was the social services editor on The Observer, and she pretended they were the same person, and that she was writing the column as well as doing everything else. She pretended she was a reporter on Panorama. She told my husband she'd won numerous BAFTAs, which he knew because he was on BAFTA Council, not to be the fact. So she's a very, very interesting woman.
Very interesting. Very interesting comment. Esther, I was going to break the interview up here, but if you're all right, will you stay with us for a few moments?
Yeah. Why did you think I'm not too old, Mike?
I'm going to take a commercial break. I'll come back after the commercials. We're talking live, wonderfully, to Esther Ranson. Don't go away.
Waking you up on Sunday. Rob McLaughlin. City Talk 105.9. City of the Stars.
Hi, this is Alex Belfiore, and you can join me this Sunday afternoon from 1 for City of the Stars.
This Sunday stars
Carol Vorderman.
If I wasn't in every paper, you'd think, oh my goodness me, it's a bad day.
Torchwood's John Barrowman.
I said, I don't like it, I get dirty. So I think there was a defining moment in my life.
And comedian Roy Chubby Brown.
I've got a lovely letter there from Slim as well, thanking me for being a member of Weight Watchers.
City of the Stars with me, Alex Belfield, Sunday afternoon at 1 on City Talk 105.9.
If you're searching for a job, whether you're out of work, would like to further your career, or you're simply looking for a change, City Talk Jobs could help. You see, City Talk Jobs is a brand new website with hundreds of jobs in your area. It's extremely easy to use and has a huge selection of jobs across all sectors. You could even apply online and send your CV to potential employers. If you want to escape to a better job, log on now to citytalkjobs.co.uk. That's citytalkjobs.co.uk.
You know, I love Buffet Star. Delicious, mouth-watering, scrumptious, piping hot, healthy Chinese and Thai food. Eat as much as you like for under 6 quid. And talking of squid, do you just love it pan-fried with lashings of salt and chilli?
Buffet Star. 60 delicious Thai and Chinese dishes to choose from for less than 6 quid. Buffet Star. Hanover Street, Liverpool. Just round the corner from Central Station.
Rob McLaughlin on City Talk 105.9.
Journalist Peter Elson is live with me in the studio. So is Professor Chambers from Liverpool Hope University. And on the line, I don't need to say it all because you just have to say Esther and everybody knows who you're talking about. It is the one and only Esther Ranson. Esther, we're talking about your book, and in the book, you do say that one of the things, or one of the worst things, of course, about getting older and beyond 50 is having to deal with loss. Now, sadly, of course, you lost somebody who was very, very well known because of all the documentaries that he made, Desmond Wilcox, your husband, 8 years ago. Is that still something that you're still trying to deal with now?
Well, it doesn't get any better, put it that way. I don't know whether I expected it to. I don't know whether other people make a lot of judgments when you're a widower or a widower. They sort of make up their minds whether you're crying too much, whether you're crying too little, whether you're going out too much, whether you're going out too little, and so on. It's odd how people make judgments. But I don't find it gets easier.
Are you lonely?
Sometimes. It's not a sort of loneliness. Like, I'm right now speaking to you from our country cottage, which Desi adored and spent every minute he could down here. So I've been sitting in the sunshine having breakfast, very aware that if he was sitting next to me, we'd be sitting there quietly just enjoying the sunlight and the garden and so on, and talking to each other about the chores we had to do, because that's obviously what married couples do. Oh, do you think that tree needs pruning?
Yeah.
I wonder whether we should have put that buddleia somewhere else, and so on.
I never have an opinion on those kind of issues. I just leave them to Adele.
Yeah, but she does talk to you about them, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. I mean, Desi always had an opinion on everything. You say I'm opinionated. You should have heard us together. So I find the most difficult times, this is just a very personal thing, are the happy times. I can get through the tough times because you just put your head down and battle on. But when you're relaxed and enjoying the sunshine and eating blueberries and having a cup of tea, it's awful not to have the person who was closest to you sitting next to you.
Very personal question, but would you ever consider marriage again, or have you ruled it out?
Well, I never say never. I think Cilla Black, the great philosopher and honorary fellow of John Moore's, once said never say never, and I agree with her there that actually you never know quite what's on the corner. But certainly, as far as I'm concerned, my life is taking me in all sorts of very exciting directions, like, you know, writing the book. I never thought I'd be writing a sort of cry for freedom and liberation on behalf of my generation, but that's rather fun to do. So there are always new things.
And talking about new things, of course, you have this TV show coming up in September on BBC Two, which you have, of course, retraced your roots. I know you're sworn to secrecy, but are there surprises in it?
Well, I was bleeding surprised, I tell you. And another piece of advice I would give is, if there are strange silences in your family history, gaps in your family tree, and you decide you want to unearth the truth, which is quite easy to do up to a point. I had specialist help, obviously, but because some of the stories in my past were not easy to track down. But basically, the internet's very helpful. Ancestry.com. You know, you can find all sorts of things out there. But be prepared for anything, because if your nearest and dearest have been silent on the subject, there's probably a reason.
That's very interesting. Well, there we are. There's a little taster for what might be in the programme when it comes out in September. And Esther, you have done so much. We've talked about That's Life. We've talked about Childline. We've talked about all the programmes that you've done over the years, predominantly for the BBC, but also, of course, for ITV and other stations as well. What's your ambition now? What is it at 68 you would like to do? Is there one thing?
The thing that I'm really focused on at the moment is to get this Red Balloon project up and running in Merseyside.
This is the Jamie Bulger Centre, yeah?
Yeah, exactly, because talking to Jamie's mother, Denise, I suddenly became aware that for 15 years since his death, she has not been able to get out of her house by herself.
Mm.
That what this has been a constant blight on her family's life, and what she desperately needs is something positive to come out of that gorgeous little boy's tragic death. You know, there's been a lot of anger and a lot of pain, and I think if we can create something better for children, then that would be wonderful, both for the children of Merseyside. It's to recover children who have become such appalling targets of bullying that they dare not go to school again. Some of them dare not go out of their homes. The woman who runs Red Balloon is called Carrie Herbert, and she tells me that some of the young people I've met and Denise has met and who look confident and happy now were in such a terrible, petrified state that they couldn't cross the road without being terrified that the gangs would find them and make their lives a misery again. So it's called James Bulger House, and if anybody's interested and would go on the Red Balloon site, you can see how to donate. Every penny will make a difference.
All right, well, there we are, Esther. It's another great cause that you're backing, and you have our total support here at City Talk. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Esther's new book, If Not Now, When? Living the Baby Boomer Adventure, is published by Headline Springboard and is priced £16.99. Esther, we wish you all the best. We look forward to seeing you up here in the not-too-distant future. But good luck with the book, good luck with the TV programme, and good luck with that project. And once again, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I think that deserves a round of applause, Steve. Esther Anson talking to us live there from a home in the New Forest.